is episode 120. I am Derek. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and buy your stuff there. Kicks us back some money. Everybody knows this if you listen to podcasts. It just helps us out. We need it because podcasts aren't free. This is a tech podcast, and we are based on thinkcomputers.org, which is Bob's site. What's up, Bob?
What's going on, man? Talking about Amazon, you know, Cyber Monday was kind of blah to me.
I felt the same.
You know, because typically Cyber Monday was when you would find the best online deals. That's why they call it Cyber Monday, right?
Yeah.
And Amazon had the exact same deals they had on Black Friday.
Yeah, not only Black Friday, but they were basically the whole week leading up to Black Friday.
Yeah, so basically for 2 weeks, the exact same things were on sale.
Which All... was nice if you thought you missed something.
Yeah, but it kind of like defeats the purpose of that pseudo holiday or whatever. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. It also kind of gave me like it lulled me into not caring.
Yeah,
a little bit. I agree. You know, I'm like I got like because I got so many ads for sales and stuff. I just kind of got like it got all washed out. It was just white noise.
Yeah, I was, you know, typically Cyber Monday was like where you could find that like $300, $400 laptop that would last you a couple years type of thing.
Yeah, because it was like a $1,000 laptop.
Yeah, and like some other good deals. And like, I didn't see anything that was like, that's the laptop. Like, you know, if your family needed a new laptop, like that's the laptop to get. Like, I didn't see any of that.
I made one recommendation to a friend for a gaming laptop, and it was only, I mean, it was a good deal, and you say he saved like $300, but it wasn't crazy like it used to be.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, I don't know what the deal is, but it was just like everything, like every store, not even just like PC related or tech related or electronics related, like even clothing stores, oh, this is Black Friday week. Everything's on sale this week, or this is Cyber Monday week or Cyber Week or whatever, and everything is on sale this week. It wasn't like you had one day, and that just like you said, it kind of just made it boring.
Yeah, it takes away like the need to go and spend then.
Yeah.
To buy then. I'm actually still getting emails about like what is Best Buy calling it? It's like a 20-day doorbuster deal or some sale.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's nice for Christmas shopping, but, like, yeah. There's doorbusters every day through Christmas. Like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, like, most of the time. When it comes to electronics, you typically buy it on Black Friday or Cyber Monday.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's usually different deals for Cyber Monday, so you kind of wait or whatnot, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there were still deals to be had. If you were going to buy a TV, I would say it was a pretty good... If you got a good deal on one, it was a pretty good time to do it. But
yeah.
Most things that I looked at, it was kind of like, eh, yeah, no. I returned more things than I, like, bought and kept.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did you keep your toaster?
No, I returned the toaster.
So you just bought toaster, it. You returned... bought it to get in line. You bought it to cut the line.
I did, yeah. It was That's way awesome. Worth it.
Yeah, I bought a lot of clothes,
right.
Cyber Monday I really didn't buy that much. I thought about a TV, but then I wasn't gonna wake up early to do it. There was some decent TV online deals, but nothing that was like really made me want to get something.
Yeah.
So.
Definitely not anything that was going to. I don't know that. Crazy, right?
And yeah.
You were also on the fence about like whether it was worth it to you or not.
Yeah.
Because of your usage.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is that I mean, I'm on the computer most of the time. I rarely watch TV. So, yeah. And I have this amazing monitor that I use, which was also on sale all week, by the way. But yeah.
For $600?
Yeah, I think it was $699 or $599. Yeah. Really, really good deal for that because it's like $1,000 monitor.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was some good things on sale, and if you were looking for something, it was definitely time to buy. But it didn't have the excitement even compared to last year. It just didn't. Either Black Friday or Cyber Monday just didn't for me.
I agree.
Yeah, but let's jump into reviews. We'll talk about some cool stuff this week. First, we have two keyboards, and they're two completely different keyboards, which is something that we don't often take a look at. And this keyboard from Logitech is actually not made for gaming. It's not what we typically look at. It's not mechanical, but it's extremely interesting. It's their craft, and based on the name, it's for creators. It's for people who are creating content and want to interact with their project or what, you know, their photo in different ways. So first off, the keyboard itself is extremely thin. It has those like really shallow keycaps that you're used to seeing on, say, like a laptop. So it's sort of like a laptop style keyboard, but it's very heavy. It feels like, I don't know if you've ever seen or played with the Apple aluminum keyboard.
No, but there's other devices that I can picture.
Yeah. It's very much like that. So the keyboard itself is really good, and I actually really do enjoy typing on it. While I almost all the time do prefer mechanical key switches, these didn't feel that bad, and you know, like I said, they felt really good. And the keyboard's extremely sturdy, something that you don't find on non-mechanical keyboards. Most of them are poorly made.
Yeah, they feel like crap.
Yeah, so this feels amazing. So it's a really great typing experience. But the big thing about this is they have this, they call it the crown, or it's a multi-input dial, which it basically looks like a big volume knob on the top left of the keyboard. It has its kind of own thing up there, and it allows three different types of inputs on it. So you could actually tap it, it's touch sensitive, so you can actually tap it. You can turn it again like a volume wheel, and you can press it. And what this does is, within different applications, it allows you to do different things. So say in Adobe Premiere, I can use it to scroll through my timeline easier. If I'm in Photoshop, it allows me to, you know, change my brush size just by turning the wheel. If I'm in Chrome, I can use the wheel to quickly go through my tabs, you know, yeah. Things like that. And honestly, when I saw this, I was like, yeah, but I'm never going to use that, right? You know, as most things like this do, but I actually use it quite a lot. You have to force yourself to use it, because it's not something that's natural for anybody, really. You know what I mean?
Force yourself to learn to use it, really.
Yes, for sure. So after forcing myself to learn to use it and, you know, and all that, I actually use it a lot, especially in Premiere, especially in Photoshop. And one thing that was really but did bother me about this is that there's built-in profiles for like the Adobe programs and Microsoft Word and like Chrome and all that kind of stuff. But there's no, you know, there's no built-in like editor. I can't add actions for specific programs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know,
there be like profiles that you can just
load So there are profiles that you can load in. Again, it's Adobe programs minus Lightroom, which I think is, I don't know why they don't have it for Lightroom, because most people use Lightroom that I know of. They have it for Photoshop.
If you're not, you should be.
Yeah, they have it for all the other ones, but just not Lightroom for whatever reason. And that's a thing that's, so the programs that you could actively use the wheel on, or the dial, it's all based on what Logitech has support for, and they only have support for a handful of programs, which is the sad part about it. So that's kind of a bummer.
Definitely.
But if your program is supported, it really makes working on your project a lot different, and I actually really do enjoy it.
Like something I would really like, personally.
I love this keyboard.
It's just a matter of whether it's supported and actually useful or not.
Yeah, like I said, I actually really do love this keyboard. And on top of everything else, it's wireless. You can charge it. It charges via USB. You can charge it while it's running.
Plugged in and working?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can charge it. Yeah, you can charge it while it's dead. You know, or
use it while it's dead.
Yeah. It uses one of Logitech's unifying receivers. Which is, it's not Bluetooth, but it's like whatever the Logitech technology is.
I thought it was still based on Bluetooth.
It's not.
Okay.
It has to use a Logitech unifying receiver. But what's nice about it is you can connect it up to three different devices. And you can actually buy these receivers separately. You can just go to Logitech's website and buy them. So you could take this with you to work or whatever. Connect it to different devices if you want. like I said, extremely solid keyboard. Didn't have any wireless issues. The software is really great. It works really well. Just not the functionality of one being able to fully customize the dial. I can't do that. I can set different actions and things, but actually being able to, you know, like when you're in Photoshop, if you click on a brush, the dial changes to different actions. If you click on text, it changes to different actions. If you click on, you know what I mean? That type of really ingrained functionality, you don't have the ability to do that. Like if I was a, you know, like say Lightroom, if I worked in Lightroom and I was a professional photographer, I want to take an hour and a half and fully program the crown to do what I want when I click something. You know what I mean?
Not only that, but you would think you would have the ability to just find fully built profiles for it. You know?
Correct. So correct.
You wouldn't even have to do it on your own.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's in the same vein of as the touch bar on the Apple, the new MacBook Pros.
Yes,
you know, like those are profiles that are pre-built for, you know, all of the Adobe products.
Yes.
So like this is similar, but without that level of detail.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, is it's all dependent on what Logitech supports, and I'm sure they'll add programs eventually. But if there's like a third party program that's not that popular that you love to use and there's not support for it, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, especially, you know, check before you buy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you have an app with it, like you're like, this is what I'm going to use it for, and you find out that it doesn't work at all, well, back to the store.
Yeah. But besides that, it's backlit. It's just white backlit.
It's perfect.
Yeah, that works for me. I think the big thing is the crown thing is really, really cool. The keyboard itself is solid and it's really comfortable. One thing I think is super cool that is just stupid, but if you're about to type, you can put your hands over the keys and not even touch the keyboard and the lights come on. Mm-hmm. I think that's just, I don't know. I just think that's actually super cool. It's just a, you know.
I think there are laptops that do that.
Yeah, there are laptops. It's just a sensor that senses. Yeah, that's pretty cool as well. You know, I like this. I totally recommend it if it supports the software that you're using. It is expensive. It's $199. That's not cheap.
It's a lot for what it is.
Yeah.
Considering it's not actually mechanical.
Yeah, that too. So I feel that if you are going to use this with your, you know, if you're a creator and you're actually going to make use of the dial, I totally really love this keyboard. I would really like them to make a version without the dial, just the keyboard, because the keyboard is awesome. I really like it.
Okay.
Especially if you're doing a lot of typing and things like that, and not everybody needs that dial. If they just made a keyboard version, you know, just
yeah, no, I just dial. I couldn't see buying this without the dial though.
True.
I would very not true. Buy this. I just wouldn't buy this keyboard.
Yeah. I don't know. I like I said, I really like the keyboard portion of it, and like I said, the dials is great as well. So, yeah, it's cool. It's cool to actually take a look at something that's not geared towards gaming. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. I think that gaming and creating, they intertwine pretty closely on occasion. So.
Yes. Yes. For sure.
Definitely. In that realm.
Yeah, so very, very cool. And of course, it's from Logitech, so you know it's pretty good quality, and they always have good stuff. So
that's definitely true.
Yeah.
You've used this with Premiere, obviously.
Yes.
Is it functional enough that you felt like it sped up your workflow?
Yes.
It's like scrubbing is.
Yeah, scrubbing is it, and it's very, very like, so when I needed to get to an exact point. Mm-hmm. Where I need to cut something, or like the exact point where I need to switch something, I'd have to hit the arrow keys to do frame by frame.
Mm-hmm.
And now with this, the dial, I can really just dial it in, and it's much quicker than going frame by frame.
And it's accurate enough to do.
Yeah, it's accurate enough that it does it. Because going frame by frame, I'd have to hit the arrow key like 10 times. Where this, I just dial it in, and I'm right there, which is nice. Yeah.
So very much video creator, a little bit less towards your photo editor.
Yeah, but I think it also would make photo editing and not as much photo editing, but Photoshop work easier. Like you click on a brush and then you use the dial to make the brush bigger or smaller. I think that's much quicker than clicking on the brush
on the mouse.
I guess you could do that to change the size of the...
Yeah, that's how I use it.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I think it just replaces that or moves it to a... You know what okay. I mean?
But a $200 cost for...
True. Very true.
I see more video use than...
I would say yes. Photo. I would say more video use. I think that, again, you have to use it. You have to see how it's going to work in your workflow. Yeah. Buy it on Amazon. You have 30 days to return it, I would say. I think that's the best bet. And if you guys have Prime through Amazon, it's no questions asked returns. It really is. Unless it's I think even on CPUs, it's no questions asked returns. I'm almost positive.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but yeah.
But yeah, if you're a Prime member, like we've bought stuff to cover CES.
It didn't end up working out for us.
Yeah, we used it and then we returned it after CES. So honestly, if you're kind of on the fence about the Craft, pick one up. I'm sure Best Buy does the return too as well.
I actually would like to try it, you know, just when you're ready and then you have all your tabs open and you're needing to switch between tabs, because switching tabs is much more of a hassle than it is switching between applications.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely seems being useful for that.
Yeah, and like it's very, if I'm in Chrome and I switch to Photoshop, there's no like lag or anything with any of that functionality either.
Yeah, okay, good.
So definitely check that out. And we have another keyboard. This one, of course, is a gaming keyboard. And this one comes from Patriot, who does have a gaming line, but I don't think it's as well known. Mostly we know Patriot for memory and SSDs, but they do have a full line of gaming products. And this is kind of like their big boy flagship mechanical gaming keyboard. You have
We saw this at CES last year, actually.
Yes.
CES 2017.
So this, like I said, this is their flagship Cherry MX keycaps, or no, Kale switches, sorry.
Yeah.
Kale switches.
Womp womp.
Yeah. They're still good. I mean, it's better than a normal keyboard.
It's better than a membrane switch.
Yes.
That's how I would describe a Kale.
Yeah. Kale, aluminum top plate, which you know is going to be super comfortable. This has the integrated wrist rest, which does have RGB lighting on it, which is pretty cool.
And it's magnetic.
Yeah. And it's magnetic.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So that
it was pretty slick, actually, seeing this thing.
Yeah, it is a really nice keyboard. It's a heavy keyboard too, very very heavy. Has your favorite roller volume knob there as well. You know, it's just it's a nice keyboard. It's
it's
their flagship. I would compare this much like to the Corsair. What is it? Just reviewed it. man. This is what happens when we do the podcast on Mondays. I just forget things.
Is the one we just you did last week?
The with the speed switches, the K95 RGB. Yeah. It's much like that. It's very big keyboard. This full keyboard, full number pad, all that stuff. You know, just I really think for a as well known brand, this is a really nice keyboard. Has a USB pass through as well, which is always great to have on anything. And the software is actually pretty good as well. And you know, I mean, Patriot hasn't been doing this that long, so to have decent software is a big deal.
And hopefully, it's not glitchy.
Yeah, it's not that glitchy from I didn't review this. Ryan did, and he said it's not that glitchy. You know, it works really well. Per key RGB backlighting, so you have that, and that's kind of standard these days. But
yeah,
still good to have as well. Just a nice keyboard. It's $140 or no?
Yep.
$119.
On sale.
Yeah, MSRP is $140, but it was $119 on Amazon. So. That's a good price. You're not getting the Cherry MX, but you're getting the Kales. You're getting the Kales, but you per key RGB, you have a very solid like design of this with the aluminum top plate. You have USB pass through. You have the multimedia functionality. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth it.
I'd say it's right in line. It's not a good deal. It would have been at 120 with Cherry switches, it would have been a really good deal.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. And that does make all the difference. You have to use them to really know the difference, but that does make a difference. Yeah. So definitely check that out. And also this week we reviewed a CPU cooler specifically made for AM4. It is the Noctua NH-U12S SE AM4. It's basically their U12S made for AM4. And as we talked about last week, Noctua was one of the first companies to have AM4 compatible CPU coolers available at launch, one of the only ones. So if you were building a Ryzen system and you want to do air cooling, Noctua is one of the only ones out there.
Not just an adapter plate.
Yes. So the NH-U12S is a single tower cooler, I believe 6 heat pipes, single fan, and it's 100% RAM compatible, which means even the fan won't overlay your memory, which is good, you know what I mean? Because so many times we get these awesome, you know, RGB modules now and all this stuff, and they just kind of run into the fan or whatever.
If you're on RGB and you spent money on that, then you go buy an air cooler that covers it up, I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
Or it just
this
doesn't
is,
work at all with it.
Yeah, this is 100% compatible. The installation is easy. You know, Noctua has always done a really great job. Like, there's really nothing bad you can say about as far as installation when it comes to Noctua coolers. Their instructions are one of the best out there. Everything, like, it's easy to find. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, it's just the process is really good as far as installation. It always has been with Noctua coolers. As far as performance goes, we tested this against the bigger brother, the NH-D15, the one that's made for AM4. And while it obviously fell behind that, it's not that far behind. And it's definitely, I tested against the AMD stock cooler. Of course, blew that out of the water by over 10 degrees. Nice. Yeah, so
it's not even, that stock cooler is not that big of a slouch either.
It's not. Well, it wasn't the Wraith cooler. It was the one that's below that, that comes with the Ryzen 5. But still, you know, you're getting over 10 degrees performance during load, and it's nice and, you know, it's quiet, and they also include a low noise adapter if you want it even more quiet, but it was more than quiet enough, at least for me. You know, easy installation, don't have to worry about even though it is a tower cooler, you're not worrying about it hitting your graphics card or anything like that. Like, no issues whatsoever. So yeah, if you have a Ryzen 5, and this can easily cool a Ryzen 7 as well, it's definitely a cooler to pick up. The only thing I would say is some people hate the fan color. You know, that's just, you're going to love it or you're going to hate it.
Colors suck. It's just that they don't go with stuff.
Yeah, very true. It's very hard to kind of match that to your build. The only thing is, it is $59.90.
It's not entry level.
Which I think that when it comes to this type of cooler, you know, single tower, like there's the Cooler Masters and things like that that are less expensive. The performance might be slightly less, but I think a lot of people are going to go for something that's around $40. You know what I mean? Rather than something that's 60. 60 is pretty high, I think, for an air cooler.
For most companies, $60 gets you pretty much their flagship air cooler.
Yeah. The D15 is $90. So. Yeah.
I mean, we do know that Noctua is just more expensive.
But... Yeah, and like the thing is that it's more expensive, but you're getting the quality. The build quality is there. The fans, like the fan has all this, it has rubber on the sides. Like it has, you know,
the sound dampening.
The sound dampening. You have extra fan clips if you want to install something. You have the low noise adapter. Like, you're getting the full package. It comes with a screwdriver to mount the cooler. You know, like all that kind of stuff that, like, you wouldn't have with other coolers, but it's still at that price. It's for a lot of people, especially first time builders, they'll be like, well, I'll just get the $40 Cooler Master.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? But
kind of it's a step up choice.
Oh yeah. It's like, it's the premium air cooler for sure. Yeah. And rightfully so. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with the cooler. This is a great cooler. One that I would highly recommend if you're building a Ryzen system for sure. So, So that's our reviews for the week. Nice solid week of reviews. And we'll go into Case Mod Friday. And I have to say, this might be on my list for one of the best Case Mods of the year. I don't know. This is the Ducati Monster PC Ultimate from, I can't even say his name, so yeah.
Oh.
I don't know if you want to try that.
No, that's not English.
Yeah, I believe he's from Thailand. Yeah, I'm almost positive that's where he's from.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think I can say that.
Yeah, I can't either. But this build is based off of a Ducati Monster motorcycle. And I have to say, if you look at it...
It looks really good.
It looks like a piece of a motorcycle. It doesn't look like a computer.
Yeah, it definitely looks... Like, it basically, it's the... Because this is an open engine motorcycle, it doesn't have the plastic body parts on it. So it's basically like the engine compartment up to the gas tank, and by compartment I just mean like the frame.
Yeah.
And forward stopping at the front and the rear wheel essentially. And it looks really, it's not like identical or anything, but it's so close that it certainly has the whole feel of
yeah.
the motorcycle being there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it is just a nice, like, I was so surprised at the way this looks, you know.
Obviously, it's water-cooled.
Yes.
What do we got for parts, is it?
That was unknown.
It looks like it might be all XSPC.
I think a lot of it is all XSPC parts.
Which isn't bad. I mean, they're cheaper, but they actually do work pretty good.
Yeah. I know there's some ROG parts in there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's hard to tell.
It's quite a bit of the computer itself is hidden. Like all of these builds, these really, really heavy theme builds, it's computer hidden within something else.
Yeah. But yeah, like the pump and the reservoir kind of look like they're part of the bike, which is cool.
It's got like what would be an inline gas filter.
Yeah.
That comes from the reservoir and the tubing there. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, like I said, this is just a nice, you know, and if you're a fan of Ducati, you're going to love this, or motorcycles in general.
Yeah. This the open chassis Ducati is probably my favorite motorcycle.
Yeah, that's just awesome. So definitely check that one out. Just super, super, super awesome. I really like it. But as I always say, we have our full section of Case Mods on Case Mod Friday. So there's a ton of builds there. So you guys can check all that out if you're looking for inspiration or something like that, or just to see what's possible. Check out that whole section. And as a reminder, we talked about it last week, but we're doing a giveaway with Reven. We're giving away one of their Justice CPU coolers, their Polaris fan controller, which I think is super awesome, and two of their Euros fans. We currently have 421 entries, but you can actually enter every day via Twitter. If you tweet something every day, you can enter. So,
nice.
And we'll be launching a contest this week as well. So definitely stay tuned for that. Can't tell you who it's from, but another contest coming. And one thing, if you guys are browsing the site, you may notice that we have a new website.
Yeah,
which was not expected at all. But if you guys have noticed over the past couple weeks, the website was really slow and things weren't loading right, and basically it came down to me just being super frustrated, and I just was done with it. And in one night, or basically like 2 days total, I completely redid the website. And I think it looks better. I think it loads faster. I think it gives us more options for certain things. I don't know what your take is on it. Derek, you said you liked it when I talked to you.
Yeah, it's much better.
Works
faster. It's cleaner.
Yeah, it's cleaner. I think it just looks better. And I think that going forward, it gives us more options to display certain things, to feature certain things, and all of that. So if you guys have any feedback on the new website, let us know. Shoot us a message. And
and they should notice a mobile version now as well.
That's not up yet.
Oh, it's not up yet.
No,
I thought that was
We have mobile version of this, but that won't be the final mobile version. The test one that I sent you is not done yet because they're working on some tweaks. But we will have a mobile-only version of the site that's going to be different than this version. That will be super fast loading, supports Google AMP as well as what's the Facebook thing called? Facebook Instant Article. Like, it will do all that kind of stuff. So if you're on mobile, you'll have a different experience, but it'll be much faster and more fluid and made for mobile. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not just a translation from desktop to mobile. Like, it's specifically made for mobile. It's just not done yet. Hopefully soon. So we'll have that before the new year. Guarantee you that. So yeah, website stuff, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So because of that, we don't have as much news as I would have liked last week, but we have some cool stuff. So first off, starting off our news is that Power Color officially launched their Radeon RX Vega Red Devil cards. This is both the 64 and 56. I have to say they look good. We saw previews and leaks of these. I think that this is one of the better looking custom Vega cards. If you're into the whole Red Devil theme, I think.
I agree. For the most part.
Yeah, I still don't think, like, I just don't know if these companies don't spend as much time on these as, say, the NVIDIA counterparts.
It's almost a little bit to me like they're not as in tune with, like, the modern market either.
Yeah.
These Radeon cards, they feel a little bit like they're from about 5 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. The design's just, like, it's cool and it looks cool, but it looks cool from, like, 5 years ago kind of thing. Yeah.
It doesn't look like anything new to me, kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't. Not at all.
I do agree that they are the better looking. This Red Devil specifically is the better looking of the ones we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Actually, by far, compared to the XFX one. That thing makes everything look good.
Yeah.
It's still just something that's just like, it doesn't quite do it.
Yeah. Well, besides design, these are factory overclocked. And they have a BIOS switch, so you can switch between overclocking mode and silent mode, and all of that. Three fan cooling, so you know this thing's gonna have a lot of power behind it as well.
Triple wide.
Yes, it has to be.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely triple slot. If not three and a half.
Three and a half, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big card.
It looks pretty, like a pretty tall stack.
Yeah. Yeah, so, big card. I think this is, for the people that were waiting, I think this would be the card to get, I would say. The Red Devil series from Power Color has been a big seller on the AMD side. Yeah. Their 580s are really nice. Definitely.
Yeah, if you want Vega, I guess this is the one to get.
Yeah.
It comes with what? It comes with a bracket for support?
Yeah, it does come with a support bracket. Yep. Yeah. Which is nice.
And required.
Yes. It has to be a heavy card. That it looks like almost like a double heatsink on there. Like, it looks big.
Uh-huh.
But cool to see it finally here. It had been teased and we saw leaks of it, so that's it's a big one. Also talking about AMD, James Pryor, who is a friend of ours and who we know very well, he sat down with Overclockers UK and talked about a lot of things to do with AMD, and a lot of questions were answered, which is kind of a big thing that a lot of people were wondering about, certain things with Ryzen and Zen and certain things with Vega. So we have the full video, which you guys can check out, but some of the main things that we kind of got out of this interview is, first of all, we've heard rumors of Vega 11. Like, what is this Vega 11? What is it? You know,
right.
So basically, it's not even a GPU; it's their solution with their Raven Ridge APUs. So this will be a Raven Ridge APU with 11 compute units enabled. So it's a Ryzen APU, and this will be their highest end or top tier APU. Currently, they've released two mobile APU variants. they have either 10 compute units or 8 compute units. So this one will have 11 compute units. We'll have the best built-in graphics for mobile, which is kind of exciting. I think that AMD has kind of fallen behind a little bit on the mobile side. So if those APUs do well, kind of give you the best of both worlds, hopefully, in a mobile package. So we'll have to see about that.
High expectations for that one.
Yes. And then AMD will use the AM4 socket when it comes to Zen 2. So we'll have the same socket, which means there should be backwards compatibility. Basically, Zen Plus, which will be the refresh, and then Zen 2, which will more than likely come 2019, possibly. That will, you'll be able to use the same AM4 motherboard. It will just be a simple BIOS upgrade, which would be nice.
So they say,
yeah.
We know how things go with AMD and their firmware.
Yes, yes. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, so basically, Zen 2 has already started being worked on. Once the fundamental parts of Zen 1 were already known, you know, Zen 2 is being worked on. And the refresh is going to be a redefined architecture, and then, you know,
on a smaller process.
There's
a smaller process for Zen 2.
Probably, we're not actually sure yet.
Okay.
You know, basically, we're gonna see like the Ryzen 2000 series.
Yeah.
And that's gonna be a refined process. So typically, that means a die shrink, but we don't know if it's gonna be or not. And then we'll see the Ryzen 3000 series after that, and that will be official Zen 2, and that will definitely be a die shrink.
I would think that they would do the die shrink with the refresh so they can iron out
iron out the issues
before
they
also introduce a new architecture.
I agree with that. That's probably what's going to happen, but with it's...
And that's a 12 nanometer process, too.
Yes, yeah. So typically that's what we'll see, but... Again, Ryzen is something new, so it's not going to be like the typical... We don't know what the typical thing is because this is brand new.
Yeah, this is second generation.
Yeah, yeah.
There is no standard yet.
Yeah, so we don't have the typical standard that we're used to seeing, so we don't know. And then finally, he talked about there being a increased supply of Vega 56 and Vega 64 GPUs, which means that these they'll be sending much more out to their board partners, which means that they'll have these custom cards, the one we just talked about, you'll be able to actually buy them. while they've been announced, they're very scarce and they're very hard to find for sale, if at all. So hopefully, you know, coming up here, going into the new year, you'll be able to buy, you know, there'll be like 3 or 4 different options as far as custom cards, and you'll actually be able to buy them. So yeah,
which
but
is
we
a
have
good thing when you're selling a product to have stock.
Yeah. So we have the full video embedded, so you guys can check that out. But it's good to get some you know, some updates before CES on AMD and what they have going on. So
it's kind of a little disappointing for a CES aspect because we might not see much of anything from the sounds of it.
Hopefully we will.
Yeah, hopefully, but
we will see.
Yeah,
they'll probably show us stuff that we can't talk about, which is typical. So. Yeah.
Cool.
So actually, last year they were like, "Yeah, we're releasing all this stuff today." We're like, "Okay, cool."
Yeah, last year was sweet, but that was the launch of Ryzen.
Yes. Yes. So, going over to the Intel side, it looks like we will be getting a Core i9-9700K with 8 cores and 16 threads on the mainstream. What do you think about that?
I think that it's awesome. I think that people that have 8700Ks are feeling sad because they probably just spent extra money to get one because they're like,
this is
going to
be
find.
More. I feel this is going to be much more expensive. It's going to, you know,
it's
how,
a, it
you
is
know
an
how
i9,
the,
it's not an i7.
You know how the core, the i9 series on 8 on high-end desktop raise the bar as far as price. I think this is going to raise the bar as far as price on the mainstream.
How do you how do you define just by the PCS or the PCI Express lanes? How do you define the difference now?
Good question.
Full, I mean, obviously they have parts with more cores and threads in the high-end desktop line, but like when you break it down, like is that it? That in PCI Express lanes? I feel like Intel is cannibalizing their product lines in their panic to like.
I think it's in their panic to match up cores and thread counts and things like that.
This
you know,
is like them like fumbling. They're like stepping backwards away from AMD as fast as they can, and they're tripping over their own feet trying to get away because they've sat so comfortable for so long.
I feel like they are shocked
by how good Ryzen did, and I don't think they should have been that shocked.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, they're scrambling to kind of define their product line. And as we saw with high-end desktop, that's a mess because nobody wants a four-core high-end desktop part with 16 PCI Express lanes.
Nobody wants to pay $300 for a motherboard to put that part in it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so and I think that we're kind of seeing that on the mainstream now where they want to match up, you know, because the 8700K is a great processor. I mean, it matches up with it as far as performance. It matches up with an 8-core, 16-thread Ryzen part. It does.
Yeah.
As far as performance.
Faster.
Yeah. You know.
I think that in gaming, it's still probably the better part.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, which explains why those things are near impossible to find, at least at a reasonable price.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think they're trying to match the marketing as far as core count and thread count. You know, but again, this is rumor. This isn't true. This isn't, you know.
Rumors have been so true lately, though, from
but it's,
Intel.
I mean, this report comes from Hot Hardware, who isn't in the business of, like, putting out headlines for views. So... Yeah, and it's going to be 10 nanometer.
Yeah.
And again, this is what we thought, or this is what the rumor has been, that this is going to be the Z390 chipset.
Right.
So yeah, hopefully we see this. This is something I'd like to see at CES.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because the rumor is this is going to launch in the first half of
soon.
2000. Yeah, soon. So, I'm pumped for it. The heat is going to be an issue. The heat was an issue with the 8700K as well.
I was reading an article about these really small processes and how much more there is to consider as far as heat and electricity and noise. It's a complicated issue. I'm actually starting to wonder if we're going to stop seeing overclocking. Like, it's just going to be unfeasible because of the heat and the
Yeah, brand. I mean, it was really hard to overclock the 8700K. Like, the overclocks that we're used to seeing on a mainstream part, on a flagship mainstream part, like, you're just not seeing just because of heat.
Yeah.
The processor can do it, but you'll fry it. Like, and that's on a Kraken X52, which isn't, you know, that's $130 AIO.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Which is
decent.
Pretty, yeah. I mean, which I think is a standard cooling these days for a lot of people. So, yeah.
Hey, yeah, it's going to be interesting going forward, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
As we really start to step down.
Yeah, for sure. So, also talking about Core i9s. It looks like Core i9 is going to come to mobile, which I would be excited for if I needed a mobile workstation type deal. Having an i9 in that would be a big deal.
Definitely.
So, but the thing is, it was interesting about this leak or whatever this is that it would be a 6-core.
Instead of an 8-core.
Yeah, it would be a 6-core, not an 8-core. It wouldn't be the big boys like the 18-core or anything like that. But I still think that brings a lot of power to mobile. And depends on the implementation of it. It could be very power conscious as well. You know what I mean? So they said the first processor could be the i9-8950HK, which was discovered in a changelog of Ada 64. Mm. You know, so not only, hopefully this brings great multi-core processing power to mobile, but on top of that, it hopefully will bring more PCI Express lanes to mobile as well.
Yeah, that's my question. How many lanes is it going to have?
Yeah, so we don't know that.
Being that it's stepped down to a 6-core, are they also going to have to step down the lanes? I mean, there's a cost to, you know, having those extra features in its power consumption. So
yeah,
with mobile, that's going to be a big question.
Yeah, this is the HK, which HK typically stands for like the ones that they don't care about power and anything like that. Like this is mobile workstation type stuff.
You plug in a brick.
Yeah, you plug it in. You plug in a brick that's big.
Yeah. You're carrying a briefcase.
Yeah.
And you're plugging in a brick.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's cool. I think that, you know, when the i9s were released, I thought we would only see i9s in the high-end desktop. You never, you know, now that we're hearing it's going to come to mainstream, and now, you know, that it's going to come to mobile, I think that's exciting. I think that we want that power. I think there's people that need it, and I think that having
there's gaming laptop manufacturers that are like dying for it because of the lanes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, there are, you know, we've had SLI'd cards, video cards, for several years now in gaming notebooks, mm-hmm. and this just enables that even further.
Yeah. So that's exciting.
Yep.
i9's going all over the place.
For sure.
Yes. So move over to cases. And, you know, I think every year Thermaltake has a case that's kind of like non-ordinary.
They're trying to these days.
Yeah. And I think this one comes, I think it's great that they launched this not at CES.
I do too.
Right now we'll have this downturn, right? Because everything was launched everything was launched like last month for holiday season, right?
Yeah.
But now it's after Black Friday, it's the beginning of December, we'll have no new launches till CES, and then everything gets launched at CES and there's a barrage of releases and news and everything gets lost.
Yeah.
Whereas right now, perfect time to launch a cool product because it's gonna get the coverage and people are gonna be interested and you can sell it for Christmas.
Yep. And I think people are even more interested right now, almost, in like, because they're grasping for bits of news right now, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everything is getting gobbled up.
So, what they did release was the Core P90 Tempered Glass Edition. This is a very interesting, I'd call it like an angled case.
yeah. Just call it like a very similar to an in-wind design.
Yeah, but it's
kind of, it's just,
you know,
yeah.
Thermaltake has had this like with their Core series, which the tempered glass kind of
wall mount.
As a wall mount type thing. This is kind of like an angle with two sides that you mount different parts on. One, it looks like one side you're mounting your motherboard and looks like motherboard, graphics card.
It's a GPU bracket, isn't it?
Yeah, so it has a GPU bracket, and then the other side looks, you can put storage and cooling and things like that.
These photos are confusing me now.
Yeah, that's kind of how it's set up.
It depends on how you set it up. Oh, okay, this is a rad over here. Never mind. I thought it was looking at a massive air cooler.
It's pretty cool design, and I think this is definitely made for like a show PC or something you want to have displayed for sure. Core series.
When you say on one side and then on the other side, it's not back and front either. We got to be specific here. They're 90 degrees to each other, so it's like building around it's like a wall PC, but building around the corner.
Correct.
Right. So you kind of have a triangle base.
Their Core series was good. I reviewed the P5 and the P3.
Yeah.
Cool to build. A little difficult to build compared to other special edition cases I've reviewed.
Yeah.
But the finished product is worth it, I would say. And I think this would be a cool display build to do.
I like this one even better.
Oh yeah, I like this one better than the normal one. You know, so
it allows for a lot of really interesting things as far as water cooling, and actually with your cabling, routing, sleeving, you can do a lot of really cool things with this because it actually increases the distance between parts.
Yeah,
so it lets you do different runs of tubing and stuff.
And on the inside of the triangle part, you can mount hard drives as well.
Oh, cool! I'd like to be able to. Well, I guess people are displaying their power supplies as well these days, because RGB is in everything, right?
Yeah, the Thermaltake makes an RGB power supply, so
yeah, be cool to be able to hide it inside as well, though.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it supports up to 480 millimeter rad in the one side. So yeah,
not bad.
Yeah, pretty cool. It'd be cool to do a build themed around this for sure. I'm just on their website now. I don't think it's for sale yet. Hopefully it's going to be for sale soon, I would think, since it's been announced. I don't think it's on Amazon. Oh, look. Hold on a second. I'm going to see if I can find it on Amazon, because I was interested to know the price. I don't think that was in there.
And what price range did the previous models come in?
They were actually pretty affordable. Yeah, so it's not on... No, so... Well, actually, the Core P5 tempered glass is $249.
So I would guess this is closer to $300.
I'd say right around $249, possibly. Oh, you're right, because...
It complicates it.
Yeah, but you have two pieces of tempered glass, and then you have all the... Like, there's just more parts, and it's just harder to... Mm-hmm. Yeah, to manufacture. So yeah, I think $299.
Yeah, or they might like shoot in between just because.
Yeah.
But I would say it's going to be more towards $300 then, in light of that pricing.
Yeah.
Which is interesting too, because it really puts it into in wind range for their unique builds or their unique chassis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Thermaltake build quality is on par.
I agree.
So it's maybe to me it's a place you don't want to put yourself. So maybe the pricing will come down. Maybe you're right.
Yeah. It'll so we'll see. Lower. I think again, great time to launch this cool product. Cool to do a build around. So I'll definitely see that. I'm sure we'll see this at CES. So we'll give you all the rundown on it as well.
Yeah, we'll see. Like the P5 was at I don't know how many booths or
yeah that or was suites, like
so this one will probably be all over the place too.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, moving on to what Derek should have created.
sort of.
Is
what I said I was going to make.
Yeah, so EK, they initially released their M.2 NVMe SSD heatsinks, and now they're just offering them in more colors, which allows you to match your build. So they're now available in red, blue, green, and purple. So you really can match your build. If you didn't want to take the heat, if you didn't want to paint the heat sink yourself, this is just a better way of doing it.
You should not paint a passive heat sink yourself unless you're very careful about what you're doing with the paint, because
yeah,
painting a heat sink will completely destroy its ability to pass heat.
Exactly. More these color options. Nice. These look awesome.
Yeah.
They look really, really sweet. So they, for those who don't know, it's a heat sink that goes on top of your M.2 drive, and if you have one that overheats and throttles, this is the solution for it. And these supports up to 80 millimeter M.2 SSDs, and pretty cool.
No, good. I found the tones to be odd. I don't know why. They're just really basic, and it's just the anodizing. I just don't find them to be super interesting tones.
I agree. I thought that they're kind of just like, yeah, but I think that these are like the basic color that anodized aluminum is available in.
Well, I mean, you can anodize aluminum anything. The sky's the limit. It's just these are probably what they think will sell.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's I agree. RGB and purple.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'd like a different shade of green or a different shade of blue, you know?
I agree, 100%.
There could be different things they do with it, so we'll see. They might have more options.
Yeah.
You
I like them
make
now.
What you think is going to sell a lot of.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. So we might see more down the line, you know, a bunch of different colors depending on how these ones sell, I would think.
Yeah, I think if you could get like some gold ones or something for different themed builds,
yeah.
That'd be nice.
That'd be really cool. Yes, for sure, for sure. So we'll move on to gaming. And this past week, a National Committee for Games Policy was created. And that was in response to the loot crate crisis, as they say. and the basically gaming economy that has to do with in-game purchases and things like that. So yeah, this is the NCGP. They said they're a coalition of high-level industry experts and influencers. Membership in the organization is invite only, and they'll work on behalf of game industry professionals and all political leanings. So yeah,
they're just trying to get it under control, I assume.
I would think, yes. So they said
it's a tricky issue, right? So it'll be interesting to see what exactly they're trying to do with this.
Yeah, and it the thing is like, what's their motivation? Are they, you know, all that kind of stuff?
I'm curious. I'd be really curious to see who are these founding members.
Yes.
What sort of power do they really think they're gonna have? Who gave them the power, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. We can make a group and call it anything we want.
Yeah, I mean, these are just like any lobbyist group with any, you know, just think of this as a lobbyist group for gaming. Okay. And obviously, different lobbyist groups have different agendas, and that's the thing you have to worry about with this. And there's no information, at least in this press release, about who the people are.
The biggest thing with something like this to me is that at certain times, certain people have used a front like this for a different agenda.
Yes.
Because this is a hot topic right now. You do this, you create this, but maybe you're really that like mom's group that's trying to like take out violent video games or something.
Because yeah.
You have another agenda. You know, you feel you're trying to just do something else, so you ride this wave to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what they're really trying to do is like take care of the loot box situation. More power to them. I feel like it is pretty much gambling and there's no way around it, and you know, kids probably shouldn't be allowed to gamble.
I agree. I think it will be interesting to see what this group does and how, if they can politically affect how games are made as far as loot boxes and the gambling aspect goes.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get. There's so many aspects to this too, because this isn't even like an American issue. It's a global, and then it's you know, segregated down to the individual country at the same time, because Belgium tried to ban loot boxes, or they did, and now they're trying to push it into Europe, but that doesn't mean anything essentially. Just that you can't sell a game in Belgium with loot boxes.
Yeah.
So it's a whole thing.
Yeah, it's a mess right now, I would say. The whole landscape of everything as far as that. And yeah. I think people are scrambling to create groups like this and thing. You know what I mean? And again, just like you said, you have to worry about what's the real agenda. Who owns these? Who's funding these?
Yeah.
What's their agenda? That type of thing.
Where
it's
does
good
the money come from is the
question. And it's good to see that people aren't happy with the product. And they're not happy with a mechanic within a game, and they're actually mobilizing to hopefully change that.
Yeah.
But again, when there's any type of movement or something, there's always, a lot of times, there's something shady going on behind the scenes of these committees or whatever. So,
yeah. Everything is not usually as it seems.
Yes. So, talking about loot boxes and all that brings us into our next story is that, Electronic Arts lost $3.1 billion in stock value after removing microtransactions from Battlefront 2. Their stock was down 8.5%, which is about $3.1 billion. I don't think it's a big deal for EA, but yeah, they're going to be fine. But I think that
it's a big enough hit to notice for them, though.
Oh yeah, that's a big enough hit, and it's a big enough headline. Obviously, I think that, you know, their stock went down because they did remove the microtransactions, and there goes a lot of money, I feel.
I feel like the stock went down more because of the negative light press being cast in.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I think it's less to do with investors feeling like EA just lost something financially, like in a value, because I don't think they're worried about that. I think that it's them getting smacked down that is the thing that caused the drop.
Yeah. So, and that was just such a, so much bad press. I mean,
more bad press.
It's one of the worst PR messes when it comes to a game, and I would say a very long time. Yep. So that happened, and it looks like we are going to see microtransactions come back into Battlefront. Who was it? The CFO, Blake Jorg, I can't say his last name. But the CFO, of EA, basically said that they're looking for, you know, a balance between people who have more time than money and between people that have more money than time. Which we were talking about before the podcast, there's people that do have more money than time. And if they can pay to get farther in a game, they're going to.
The problem is, sure, that's fine. If you've got money, that's great. But you shouldn't be able to buy performance in a game. You can buy content. You can buy personal advancement as far as storyline or characters, I guess. But when it comes down to competition,
yeah,
it shouldn't make a difference in your performance.
I mean, that's what, isn't that why, like,
and that's the big problem with this. Yeah,
isn't that why, like, baseball teams like the same baseball teams win? Because there's no salary cap, so whoever whatever organization has the best money typically buys the best players, and it's like, you know,
unless you're the Yankees, in which case you just throw a lot of money away.
Yeah, apparently. But I mean, that's why the Yankees were so good for so long.
And they're so good, they just don't win.
But I mean, that's just, you know, that's what this turns this into. And it's just like, you know, if say Battlefront turns into like an esports thing somehow, you know, like, okay, so we have this much money to spend on our team, we're gonna buy all this stuff so we're the better team, and you know, it's the same type of thing.
Don't even go as far as esports, just go as far as competition and fair play. Like, why do I want to play a game when this guy can just buy a gun that just kills me instantly, even though I'm better than him?
Yeah, exactly. And then, like I said, you don't even want to be a casual gamer and jump on a server and this guy's owning everybody because he paid so much money to get this awesome whatever.
You'd be hard pressed to explain the difference between pay to win and hacking to me. Other than there was a cash exchange involved, and actually a lot of hacks people pay for too. So there's really zero difference.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
I think we're all on the same page as far as hacking goes, right? Hacking's bad. No one's saying hacking's good, right?
Exactly.
So then, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're going to come back into the game. They have to. They make too much money for EA. But hopefully, the pay to win in multiplayer and in competition is not present.
So there's a couple of different aspects of like what we're talking about, and to me it's like the biggest thing that bothers me is that if I'm paying full price for a game or you know what would be full price even if it's on sale or whatnot, I should have the game and the same and the full ability to get all of the content without having to pay anything more or play for an unreasonable amount of time. And like this like destroys that value. It's not quite the same thing as the way that we pay for like unfinished and we pay for incomplete games where you have to buy maps like almost immediately.
Yeah.
That's another aspect of this same thing. But this is kind of a little bit more like it's along the same lines, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And this whole situation that we're in, that we've just kind of like slowly drifted into as a community, I feel like there really needs to be some sort of a discussion. And but how can you, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, like, it's, we talked about, like, that group.
Yeah.
I know they're more focused on the gambling loot crate thing, but I think all of this and the amount of press and everything that especially Battlefront has got, hopefully will make it easier for that conversation to happen.
Yeah, and I actually have something behind.
Yeah.
But, oh man, as much as I think that could happen, I wonder, like, what is a company that, like EA, that has, they're bound to their stockholders to have to make money, right?
Exactly.
They have to make more money. That's their job. How can any conversation we have any impact on them unless they think it's going to help them out in some way in the future?
True. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to see, you know, what happens with Battlefront, and obviously when something does happen, we'll definitely let you know.
Yeah.
It
will probably be hard to miss.
Yeah, definitely be hard to miss. So that brings us to the end of our news, and coming this upcoming week, we have three awesome reviews as well as one of my favorite articles of all that we do all month. So first, I'll be checking out the Vert Desk V3. That is a electric sit-to-stand desk. Really awesome, super sturdy. I highly recommend a sit-to-stand desk for anybody who sits at a computer for an extended period of time. It's just a good thing. It's a healthy thing. And it's a cool thing as well, because it just changes your workspace. So I'll have that for you. And I like I said, highly recommend cool. those.
Look forward to that.
Yeah. And then taking a look at the Crucial BX300. That is their very affordable, very aggressively priced 2.5-inch SSD. Not made to be the fastest thing out there, but to be very affordable. So if you're building like we did with our RGB build, we wanted to go all SSDs, and for the super fast stuff, we went the NVMe route, but we wanted some 2.5-inch drives. Like, this is what you could throw in there.
And they're still relatively fast.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
This is still, I don't know how many times faster than a platter drive.
Yeah.
But many.
Yeah. This is about, I forget how many times, but yeah.
I want to say five.
It's about 100 megs. So
yeah,
like four five. Or five. Yeah, four or five. Yeah. You know, yeah, these are great. Even for first, like I said, for an OS drive, this is perfect. You know what I mean?
Or a couple of these in one system.
Yeah, a couple of these rated would be great.
That'd be fast too, actually.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So these just like I said, it's their sort of, you know, they had their was it the BX200? They had their MX200s. That's what we threw in the RGB build. So. You know, just like I said, just an overall great 2.5-inch SSD. Coming from Crucial, you know the NAND on there is good because it's made by them.
Yeah, Crucial makes good stuff.
Yeah, so good stuff on there. And then I'll be taking a look at an RGB mouse pad. So,
okay.
RGB everything, that's kind of the deal. This is the Corsair MM800 RGB Polaris. That's, again, their RGB mouse pad. It's actually pretty cool. I have to say, like, having it sitting on your desk is really cool.
I can see that. I also see the plug-in for the mouse right on the pad being pretty cool too.
Yeah, so there is an integrated, because this is powered by USB, it's connecting to your PC anyways. So there is an extra USB port on it, which makes it great for plugging in your mouse or plugging in whatever it may be. Like right now, I actually have my the microphone that I'm using plugged into that USB port.
It seems to be working.
Oh yeah, I would hope so.
Any issues or concerns with that as far as using a mouse on it goes?
I don't think, because, well, I guess there is data being flown. It's only one cable, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is being data pushed to the RGB controller.
Yeah.
As well as the mouse. I don't know, but I really don't think. But Yeah, I mean that. Yeah,
possible, I guess.
It's really possible. Convenient though. Oh, because, super convenient.
Yeah, like the mouse cord can be an issue.
Yes.
You just have it like plugged in right above the pad. That's pretty slick.
Yeah, it's just like it's nice. It gives you. I'm a huge fan of always having an extra USB port close so I don't have to get up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this gives you that.
Oh, and another bonus to it, it faces away.
Yes.
So, like, I have a keyboard and the extra port faces towards my mouse, which is worthless.
Yeah, yeah, so. Exactly. So this is designed correctly. RGB lighting is really cool, and it's controlled by the Q software, so you can really customize the RGB lighting. I don't know how many actually lights that are in it. There's a lot though. So you can really customize that as well. It's just cool. They make a soft version. I have the hard version, so it's a hard, you know, the harder style mouse pad.
Yeah.
But again, we'll talk about it next week. But yeah, just that's what we'll be taking a look at. So
cool.
And as I said, one of my favorite articles is our worst PC setups, and that's actually gonna, when you hear this podcast, it will be out because it's gonna come out tomorrow. So there's some really funny ones in there this month. So basically, we go out and find some of just the bad, just people who are moving or they're just slobs or whatever, and they have really bad PC setups.
Just yeah. Really bad lives.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have that. So that brings us to the end here. Did you do anything fun this week, tech-wise?
I don't remember if I talked about Wolfenstein 2.
You did. You said okay. You got it.
Did I play it yet?
Did you?
I don't remember which day I played it on. I was only able to play it one day so far.
Do you like it?
Really good so far.
Nice.
I've heard it might get worse, so crossing my fingers. Other than that, nothing really. No changes or upgrades that I can really talk about yet.
Yeah, so for me, yeah, same thing. Just been working on reviews and getting all the stuff. Like I said, redid the website. That was kind of my week, was redoing the website, so.
Yeah. Which is a thing.
Yeah, I thought I definitely broke things like more than once on the whole upgrade thing. So there's definitely probably parts of the site that are still broke. So
we'll get it there.
Yeah, we're getting there. But it should load much faster for you guys and be a better overall experience, and that's what we're worried about. So yeah.
Cool.
So as I always say, we have a full show notes page that has everything that we talked about. So if we're talking about something and you want to know more, you can click through and check it out. And of course, links to all of the reviews and articles as well. So until next week, catch you guys later.